Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 134, recorded Tuesday, October 31st, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: what's the value of loyalty, and need those five stars. We're coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois. My wife is manning the doorbell for the Halloween kids. I'm kind of full up on sneaking snacks out of that out of the basket, so I decided to do a podcast. No exciting or sort of exotic travel since the last episode. Just a quick down and back to Atlanta, a day in Washington, D.C., and a few trips to Charlottesville, Virginia. You know, the first trip to Charlottesville about 3 weeks ago was the first time I've been back in 5 months after spending more than a year there. Other than, you know, flights being poorly timed, there are nonstops from O'Hare, but they arrive at either 2:45 in the afternoon or a quarter past midnight. It's been a great town to visit. So I was surprised as anyone by the white supremacist march there in August. So this next time back now, a couple of weeks ago, I was on a late night flight, and when I walked out of the terminal, the one cab at the curb had already been claimed, but it was only about a 4-minute wait for the Lyft driver, so it wasn't really a problem. Indeed, it turned out to be a great ride. The Lyft driver, an older black guy, told me unprompted the whole backstory of the protests, how it started as a local political battle that then blew up big. He wanted me to know that Charlottesville just wasn't like that. He told me, "I've lived here for 40 years, and I've never seen that Robert E. Lee statue until one day I drove past the park and looked to my right, and there it was. But, you know," he said, "it still needs to come down." So since the white supremacists had shown up the Saturday before we were showing back up in Charlottesville, I said to the project team, I said, "Look, we need to find out where that statue is so we can avoid it." And since one of the project team was from India and the other was born in the U.S. of Indian parents, I didn't want to be stumbling into some line of tiki torch bearing protesters. But, you know, they kind of got away from us and we just forgot about it. And so we're driving, we got Google Maps up, we're trying to find the restaurant. We missed a turn. Actually, it's not so much that we missed the turn as we missed going straight, because the road we were on actually did turn and we followed it, and we were sort of wandering around, and I look up and, wouldn't you know, there's that damn statue. There's that Robert E. Lee statue covered in a black tarp. So, you know, just when we were trying to avoid it, boom, there it was. There were a couple of people camped out in front of it and another group of people walking toward it. I suggested to the guy who was driving, I said, "You know, we probably don't need to come to a complete stop at this intersection." And then closing out my travels, you know, for all of my complaints and bitch tweeting about delayed flights, I have to say that my American flight home from Reagan National this past Saturday morning, it was just great. It was great. I mean, exit row seat, no one in the middle, everyone boarded quickly in a structured and orderly fashion, putting their stuff in the overhead bin. Everybody found places in the overhead bin. The flight attendants closed the door. We left 10 minutes early. And since there was no traffic on the taxiway and it was a beautiful sunny day, we were up and over the Potomac in 5 minutes from pushback. Just everything lined up. Now, typically, though, you know, nothing like this goes unpunished at O'Hare. But we landed, we didn't have to wait for a gate, and we just taxied straight in, arriving a half an hour early. I got to tell you, this is setting bad expectations, because, you know, damn if it doesn't make me look forward to my next trip.
Release is required. Release. Release is required. Release. We'll be right back.
So following up, my most recent trip through Atlanta, hanging out in the pre-check line, there was no x-ray machine choreography this time. Now, if you remember in the last episode, actually the last couple of episodes, I talked about the TSA agent at the parallel loading x-ray machine coordinating each bin push, having everybody hold until all the previous bins had cleared, and then everyone pushing their bin onto the conveyor at once. And not this time, though, you know, I did get a bit of a stink eye from a couple when I walked around them to get to one of the further up loading stations. My thought was, is they're just obviously not old PC, you know, experienced older PC folks, that being personal computing, not political correctness, because otherwise they would have instantly understood, you know, the difference between serial and parallel paths. Spin the propeller there a little bit. Anyhow, I just avoided them and went and figured out how to push and shove my bin onto the conveyor belt in front of them. Now, following up on the packing pro tips from the last episode, which I also repurposed, you could call that recycled, into the Ruthless Packing Tips blog post on the Travel Commons. Anyhow, Dan Bennett, who's the CEO of TestFax, sent me a link to a study where they tested and compared 32,672 luggage prices. I'll put a link to the study in the show notes so you can go deep on it, especially if you're thinking about buying luggage. But, you know, a couple of interesting factoids that just sort of I pulled out of the introductory infographic that they've got on the webpage. So first and foremost, I say you can save an average of $110 or 39% buying online. They say that Walmart and Target's online stores tend to have the highest discounts. That kind of makes sense. Kohl's and Macy's have the lowest discounts. Now, Amazon is sort of in the middle at 10th place for average discount. It looked to be about in the 40% range, but is tops by a long way as far as having the greatest variety of SKUs, the greatest variety of luggage. Over 12,000 luggage items versus Jet, which was second, which was number two on the list. And luggage sets have a 23% higher discount than single pieces of luggage. So there you go. Check it out. Link in the show notes. I thought it was kind of an interesting piece of analysis. Dan, thanks for sending in the note to highlight it. Jim McDonough posted a traveling while injured story on my on the Facebook page, on the Travel Commons Facebook page, that just puts my biking injury whining just completely in its place, just completely tops it. Jim writes, "My wife and I were in County Kerry on the west coast of Ireland. We were killing time before dinner at an ancient stone circle at the edge of town. I was taking some photos and it started raining. So while walking down the slope, I was putting my camera back in my bag to keep it dry when my left foot slipped on the wet grass. My right knee hyperflexed, causing a complete tear of my quadricep tendon. Ow. There was a loud crack. Okay, ow squared, but no pain. Turns out, you know, you can't walk without a quadricep tendon. We didn't know what the problem was. My wife ran off, found some people, got them to come and get me. They took me to the doctor's house. The doctor, more like a physician's assistant, the regular doctor was away, poked around but couldn't diagnose anything. We went back to our B&B but did not go out to dinner that night. Flying home a couple of days later, Dublin to Gatwick to DFW, I needed assistance for the connections, as you might guess. British Airways took such good care of me in Gatwick that I'll fly them whenever I can. While on the plane, I was okay. I used seatbacks to get to and from the restroom. American was supposed to provide a wheelchair at DFW, but they failed to until the lead flight attendant got on the horn and got me one. I had surgery a couple of days later, and my rehab took a few months. This is the same injury that Bill Clinton had at Greg Norman's house. I think he had a better medical plan than I did. Jim, just ouch. God bless it. That that hurts. That hurts just thinking about it. Reminds me of many years ago when I broke my right foot. Just getting out of my car in Philadelphia, I stepped onto some broken concrete and heard a loud snap. after a long wait in an ER in downtown Philly, where they were rightfully triaging gunshot victims over me. They plastered me right up to my thigh and told me not to put any weight on my foot. The next day, I'm now hobbling, crutching through 30th Street Station, down the stairs to the train platform, you know, just crutching down with a carry-on bag kind of strapped somewhat across my back, swinging with every move of the crutch. I have to tell you, no one from Amtrak took any sort of care of me. Now, Mika Prakala, and I'm sure I've just butchered Mika's last name, it looks Finnish because there's a lot of non-vowels in his last name, but he's a longtime listener. Mika keeps sending stuff to me, and I keep butchering his name every time I mention it on the podcast. So sorry about that. Anyhow, he tweeted me a great video of what I assume is a new service that guides blind travelers through airports. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a YouTube video. It's a great demo, and it shows how a person in I guess the vendor's contact center is viewing a real-time video stream through what I assume is sort of a video camera mounted on the head of the traveler, and then providing audio guidance, turn left, turn right. And, you know, kind of watching the video made me realize what a minefield an airport is for a blind or low-sighted traveler. I mean, I guess I should have realized this. It's typically a minefield for, you know, those of us with 20/20 vision. Anyhow, thanks, Mika, for the pointer. It is a very cool video. Link in the show notes. Look it up and check it out. It's not long, few minutes. I thought it was very interesting. You know, on a, I don't know, darker, sadder note, disappointing note. You know, the Me Too Twitter campaign on sexual harassment that started up a few weeks ago reminded me of a couple of stories that women have told me about, you know, just traveling in planes and seat assignments of all things, right? I mean, you would think seat assignments, pretty straightforward. One was from a woman CIO. She told me she was sitting in her aisle seat assigned. She's got status. Pre-boarded, you know, because she was pre-boarding with the top status group. So she's sitting there, she's downloading some last-minute emails, you know, while the rest of the passengers board. At some point, she just sort of look, you know, she can feel presence. She looks up. There's a guy standing there who says to her, "Why don't you just slide over, honey?" Pointing to the center seat. She closed her PC, stood up, and didn't say a word. It just pointed the guy to his center seat. But then ended up, you know, leaning into the aisle for the rest of the flight. You know, another story was from a woman, a friend of ours, a woman air marshal, who was sitting in her assigned aisle first class seat, armed and incognito to everyone except the flight crew. Now, during boarding, a well-known male TV host from MSNBC asks her to switch seats. Now, she can't. The regulations say that the air marshals need to be in their assigned seats so the flight crew and, you know, the pilots and everybody can find them if they need to. They know who they are. They know where they are. But she can't tell him that because, you know, she's an air marshal. She's traveling undercover. So she can't tell the guy why she can't move seats. So she, you know, she politely tells him no. To which he becomes very irate and obnoxiously berating her. Do you know who I am? And all that sort of stuff. And as much as she'd love to tell him why she can't move, and probably would love to use her firearm as an exclamation point, she can't. So she's got to sit there and take it until finally a flight attendant comes over and intervenes. You know, followed by, again, an uncomfortable two-hour flight in close quarters with this troglodyte. You know, sexual harassment is bad, full stop. Having to fend someone off and then be in the same tight metal tube with him, unable to leave, that's even worse. Hey, but on a brighter note, if you have any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. It's been a long time, but you can always, since someone's done it, but you can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment, send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or, as always, the website. Put your comments at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, what's the current value of loyalty? I have to tell you, I continue to love Hertz's new President's Club pick your own car aisle. Yes, I know that National's been doing it for years, but on my last trip to Atlanta, I was walking down the aisle looking at the cars. Altima, Altima, Hyundai, Altima, Jag, Altima. What? Wait, what? I back up, like, really quickly. It's a new Jag Model XF. I look up at, you know, at the signs. You know, no, I'm still in the President's Club aisle. I haven't slipped into somehow into the upgrade aisle. I look down again. There's the key. Hey, let's grab it. I throw my bag in the back, and then, you know, just take off on one of my nicer drives up I-85 through the city. You know, kind of nice after, you know, kind of nice to drive a new Jag. It was kind of fun. Now, another time I was walking down the President's Club aisle and a Hertz guy pulls up right next to me in the space next to me as I'm walking down in a new Dodge Charger. And he hops out, hands me the keys and says, you know, we want to make sure you guys have a nice selection of cars to choose from. And so now, you know, as the year's winding down, I'm looking, I'm thinking to myself, well, how many more rentals do I need to do to keep President's Club status? That's how much I like it. You know, I kind of felt the flip side of that last week at the Charlottesville Courtyard, where, you know, as I'm filling up a couple of water glasses in the workout room cooler at the end of the night, I just kind of tweet out, I kind of hate Courtyard hotels. They offer the worst experience for the money to Marriott Platinum members. Now, Scott Drake tweeted back, rightfully so. He said, all right, I'll be the contrarian. At the price point, is it not valuable? Are you expecting the JW experience at a Courtyard? While Michael Klein asked, detailed explanation, maybe on the podcast. So Michael, here it is. Mine was a tweet that came out in an annoyingly pissy way from a comparison between my stay at an Atlanta Marriott the prior week and then this Courtyard in Charlottesville. So for about the same rate, the Atlanta Marriott gave me a bit of a welcome gift, free breakfast every morning, restocked my room with bottled water. The Courtyard, I could either pick a bottle of something out of their little market next to the front desk or have one free coffee during my entire stay. I was staying there, you know, three nights. Pick which night you want that free coffee, buddy. I took the bottle of water, which I then filled up every morning in the workout room until, you know, the maid threw it out of my room. Now, I'm not knocking the maid. She's just doing her job. But as I'm, you know, carrying the now filled glasses of water back to my room, I'm thinking, you know, why am I staying here? It's not that I couldn't go buy a bottle of water and expense it. It was more just sort of the disconnect of the thing, you know. How much better the Marriott treated me for the same price. And hey, they're in the same company, right? I mean, they're different brands in the same company. It just didn't make any sense. On my last trip down to Atlanta, the one I talked about where where I kind of got chubby in the X-ray machine choreography, I flew Delta, where I have absolutely no status. I was trying to sort of thread my flights between already booked conference calls. This trip came up at the last minute. And Delta, with way more flights than American or United, really was the only way that I could kind of string everything together. On the way down, I could not get a seat assignment until I was at the gate. 32B, second to the last row on an old Boeing 717. The last of that DC-9 MD-80 series. And I think these Delta got from the old Air Trans after Southwest bought Air Trans. So, you know, I'm at the gate and I'm looking at it. Hey, 32B, it's a DC-9. So I thought I had lucked into an aisle, but as I got on the plane, I saw that, you know, those 717s have a 3-2 configuration, opposite of the 2-3 configurations that American and the old Northwest ran on their MD-80s, so B is a middle seat. Now, the flight was fine. The service was reasonable. It's a short flight, so it wasn't a big deal, but it was definitely a less enjoyable experience than my Saturday flight on American with the, you know, the exit row aisle seat and an empty middle seat. There was a study a few months ago that showed American was the most stingy carrier with award seats. And you know, there are other ways that they've eroded the value of loyalty. I've flown American since July 1985, when I started my first full-time job in Dallas. And I've noticed them chipping away, you know, at the value of loyalty for over, I don't know what's now, 37 years. 37 years. That's kind of a frightening number to say out loud. But I have to tell you, when my objective is to get from point A to point B with the least amount of hassle, there is still some value to loyalty. There's some value to being able to pre-board and, you know, pick a seat that hopefully has got a little bit more legroom, which is, you know, sort of kind of the muddling middle ground I've carved out nowadays. Invest enough time and effort to hit the loyalty level that fits the value I'll get. So I'm going to go out of my way to re-up my Hertz status because they've given me great rental car choices. It's fun. I'm not going to push for anything more than mid-level airline status on American or United because, you know, with the high load factors and their push to sell first-class seats, there's not much more to get, you know, than free front-of-the-plane seating and a reasonable shot at overhead bin space. I mean, going out of my way to make American's Executive Platinum or United's 1K again, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be worth it anymore. And with the courtyards, you know, there's just not a whole lot of value in a $2 bottle of water. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, yeah, I need those 5 stars. You know, a few months ago, after an overnight stay at a residence in Baltimore, I wrote up a TripAdvisor review. I titled it Pretty Standard Residence and Experience and gave the place 3, I don't know, whatever TripAdvisor calls them, stars, circles, I don't know, whatever they are. I gave them 3. I mean, it seemed in line with the review where I said, you know, hey, it's a standard Residence Inn setup. It was friendly service. The shuttle driver provided good service driving us to and from some nearby businesses. Nothing controversial. So I was a little surprised when I got a note the next day from the general manager who said, thank you very much for going on TripAdvisor.com to review our hotel. We greatly appreciate it. One request I have, if you would be willing, is if you might consider changing your rating from a 3-star review to a 4-star review. Marriott Hotel views a 3-star review or lower as a 0, meaning the hotel takes a hit, a mark against it, for providing what Marriott considers a bad stay, which is 3 or under in their view. It looks like your comments indicated that you had a good stay. In that regard, I wonder if you'd be willing to change your score up to a 4. We really would appreciate it if you would. I don't know. I have to admit, I didn't change the rating. I mean, maybe I should have, but honestly, I don't know how to change the rating. Once you commit it, I don't know where edit is on the TripAdvisor page. And I don't know, even if I did know where the edit link is, I just really didn't want to. I thought it was a 3-star experience. I mean, I'm sorry that Marriott doesn't give you credit for that, but I kind of feel like that's not my problem. Now, I have to tell you, I am nothing if I am not inconsistent, because I'll give every Uber and Lyft driver 5 stars if they get me to my destination in a reasonably clean car without annoying me. Indeed, I was right with my son when he jumped all over my wife for giving a Lyft driver 3 stars for what she thought was a, okay, nothing special ride. Andrew said, you're going to get him kicked off. And he wasn't wrong. Andrew wasn't wrong. Internal Uber documents, they leaked a couple of years back. It said that drivers with ratings less than 4.6 would be considered for deactivation. So I look at it, this is a little different than TripAdvisor. I mean, here, Uber, the owner of the platform, is saying that a reasonable, acceptable ride should be 5 stars, since anything less would slide the driver down toward the deactivation zone. Not, you know, it's It's the internet version of the Lake Wobegon effect. Everyone is above average. I mean, the latest stats I saw on Yelp said that the average rating is 3.8 and that 46% of the reviews had 5 stars, which explains why that 4-star diner you drove to try out was just okay. Average, nothing special. call me cranky, but the two apps that I regularly rate on, so TripAdvisor and Untappd, I rate average as a 3. You know, sometimes I feel like, you know, kind of like King Canute trying to hold back the waves of grade inflation. Now, on Untappd, anything below a 3, I wouldn't order again. A 3 is okay. 4 is a great beer. 5 is outstanding. So just to test myself, again, because I'm nothing if I'm not inconsistent, I just downloaded my stats, pulled them down from Untappd. I have to admit, there's over 6,000 check-ins on Untappd that I have. As I've admitted in other episodes, I have a craft beer problem. But I downloaded the stats, pulled them into Excel, and after a little remedial pivot table training, I can see, actually, that despite my best efforts, I'm a bit skewed. Personally, as well as in my ratings. 13% of my ratings are below 3. 60% are between 3 and 3.75. 26% between 4 and 4.75. And only 1% at 5. So the median of those 6,000 plus check-ins, the median rating is 3.5. Okay, not as bad as Yelp. But I don't know. On the other hand, maybe it's because I really like beer. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 134. I hope you all enjoyed this episode and hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you tell your friends about it. And in the show notes, you can point them to links in SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes where they can find this episode. Also, you'll find music links for the bridge music in the show notes, as well as links to Mika's YouTube video that he sent me, as well as links to the luggage pricing study that I mentioned. Hey, as always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file, the email address, which has not changed since the beginning of time, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, mpeacock at Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, or post them in the comments under this podcast posting on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone. Jim, Mika, everybody who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website or on the Facebook page. So that's it. That's all for this month. Look forward to an episode. I'll try and get the November episode out a little bit earlier, so perhaps you have something to listen to when you're in the TSA line waiting to fly home for Turkey. But until then, take care, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.